Welcome to today's Strategic Housing Podcast, where our goals are to connect people, share innovative ideas, and collaborate with partners on affordable housing opportunities and replicable models that strengthen our communities in Kentucky and across the nation. My name is Edwin King, and I'm the Executive Director of the Kentucky Housing Corporation. Today's podcast features the Recovery Kentucky program, which was created to help Kentuckians recover from substance abuse, help them gain control of their lives, and eventually reside in permanent housing, thus reducing the state's drug problem, which often leads to chronic homelessness. We also pay tribute today to the late Don Ball, who was one of the most influential, humble, kind, and compassionate friends to affordable housing. His life's work was building houses, but he had a heartfelt passion as a philanthropist to help people and communities address causes of homelessness and addiction. He served as chair on Kentucky Housing's Board of Directors from 2004 to 2008, and his legacy program, Recovery Kentucky, has become a national model. For his work, Don Ball has won several awards honoring his lifelong dedication to affordable housing and special programs and initiatives impacting individuals and families for generations to come. With me today is Mike Townsend, who serves as administrator of the Recovery Kentucky program for Kentucky Housing Corporation and has worked alongside Don Ball, helping bring his vision for Recovery Kentucky to the Commonwealth. Welcome to our podcast, Mike.
Thanks.
Thank you for being a guest with me today and sharing your insight on Mr. Ball's contributions to program. So just a little bit about Mr. Ball. What was Mr. Ball's role in the development of the Recovery Kentucky initiative?
Well, I think my first meeting with Mr. Ball was when he became the chairman of the board of Kentucky Housing Corporation. Prior to that, he was known in the Lexington, Central Kentucky area, primarily because of his commitment to helping through programs that he sponsored or wanted to be involved with to help people move out of poverty. He was involved with the Hope Center of Lexington, was on the board of directors for the Hope Center, and when Governor Ernie Fletcher was elected governor, Governor Fletcher asked that Don Ball be made chairman of the board of Kentucky Housing Corporation, and he brought with him a lot of those initiatives that he had learned about in the Lexington area that had helped men and women recover from addiction to basically better themselves through programs of what I call giving a hand up rather than a handout.
Great. Well, I certainly know about them, but can you talk about maybe other initiatives that took place through KHC under Mr. Ball's board of directors chairmanship that affected the homeless in Kentucky?
Yeah, there were a number of initiatives that happened in addition to the Recovery Kentucky program. Mr. Ball took the Recovery Kentucky model and made it a statewide model with the support from the governor. But in addition to that, he also worked with a program called Scholar House. Scholar House started with a model program in Lexington called Virginia Place that was then turned into one-parent Scholar House later on. But because of the success of that program to help families with children who were full-time students at colleges or university to get their degree and become self-supporting, Mr. Ball initiated a Scholar House initiative through Kentucky Housing Corporation, and today we now have 8 Scholar Houses across the state. Again, these are just model, very innovative approaches to helping people move up from poverty. Another program that he initiated while he was the chairman of the board was a program called Safe Havens, and this was an initiative to help men and women who were victims of domestic violence, who had severe and persistent mental illness, and homeless families with children. And this was a program that where Kentucky Housing Corporation allocated funding for housing in throughout the state, primarily through homeless shelters that had case management support. So the idea, again, was to help men and women who were victims of domestic violence, persistently mentally ill, or were homeless families with children to move into stable housing, and then over time through case management to become self-sufficient. So again, a very innovative approach, trying to give back to those people who were less fortunate. Another program was called Money Follows the Person. And this was a kind of an outgrowth of the Olmstead Act in Kentucky, which was a federal mandate that it stated that persons who were living in personal care homes or nursing homes or who were in institutions had the right to live in their own community. So through a contract with the Department of Medicaid Services, Kentucky Housing Corporation implemented a plan to help persons who were institutionalized move back to their community through housing support. And this was a joint partnership between Kentucky Housing Corporation and the Department of Medicaid Services. And again, another program was aging out of foster care. Again, as young people age out of foster care at age 18, they are provided up to, I think, a year of housing support. and the Department of Community-Based Services contracted with Kentucky Housing Corporation to provide that housing support for those young people that were aging out of foster care. So again, just many, many different innovative programs that were helping persons that were disabled or were disenfranchised by their status and their employment as or just poverty, and try to help move them into self-sufficiency. Again, Mr. Ball, that was his focus, was to give a hand up rather than a handout.
What a great legacy for him. And obviously one of his greatest legacies of all the programs and was near and dear to his heart was the Recovery Kentucky program. So let's lead into the Recovery Kentucky program, Mike. Can you tell our listeners about the Recovery Kentucky model?
Yeah, it's a supportive housing project which centers on using a recovery program model that includes peer support, focusing on daily living skills, classes, jobs, and responsibilities that establishes new behaviors. So it's a very unique program that promotes supportive housing and a recovery. The White House, I think, implemented an initiative back in the 90s that said that this is a program that works. This was aimed at the program that was kind of the grandparent of the Recovery Kentucky model, the Healing Place of Louisville. The Recovery Kentucky program provides a stable place to live, a support system to help men and women address underlying problems of homelessness, addiction, because many times these individuals will move to shelters or to public hospitals, prisons, psychiatric institutions throughout their life. So unless there is an alternative that really gives them the opportunity to change their life through this recovery model, they would probably be in our public debt through institutions or even dying from the disease of addiction.
Well, I've had other states reach out and ask me about the Recovery Kentucky model. Maybe you can tell our listeners, how does the Recovery Kentucky model help to change behaviors for people who might have been addicted to drugs and alcohol?
Yeah, it's a unique process. It's sometimes difficult to explain how this model works. It's actually initiated originally from a program in Louisville called the Healing Place of Louisville. That was a shelter for men and women, many of which were suffering from addiction and mental health problems. And the Jefferson County Medical Society got involved in trying to look at ways that they could help those men and women. They hired a social worker who happened to be in recovery from addiction, and he put together a program called the Healing Place that uses a education, peer support, and accountability to help men and women have a long-term effort at providing for recovery. That model worked in Louisville, and in Lexington, about a year or two later, the Lexington homeless shelter was struggling with trying to help men and women recover from addiction. They contacted the Healing Place and asked them to provide that model for them. That's when Mr. Ball was involved with the Hope Center of Lexington. And because that model had such a dramatic impact on the men and women, then Kentucky Housing Corporation incorporated that model into this model that works. It's a combination of education, peer support, program accountability, and it basically gives people hope. I think the program is based on the 12 steps of the Alcoholics Anonymous, and it over time, it allows men and women to act into a new way of thinking. It presents practice and principles of the 12-step program so that there can be basically a psychic change after going through this program. It's a model that has a great deal of experience in terms of working. The men and women that go through this program are asked to give back and to be mentors in the program. And it's been replicated in other states, but it's also being evaluated every year by the Kentucky Housing Corporation.
What are the key elements that must be in place to help reinforce the lifestyle changes that take place in a Recovery Kentucky program?
Yeah, I think the primary issues are hope. And I think there's a lot of trust that has to be engendered in these programs. The men and women that come into these programs are oftentimes they're homeless. They have been disenfranchised. They oftentimes have had criminal justice involvement. There's a lot of shame, guilt, anger, remorse. So what this program does is gives the people that come into the program a hope that over time, if they practice the principles of this program, this 12-step program, then their life can change. And I think over time, through the mentoring, the accountability that they're held in this program, we see significant change in their behaviors. They have a new hope. They want to give back to other people. They learn new skills while they're in the program. If they don't have a GED, they will probably get their GED while they're in the program. So it basically it prepares people to what we call living life on life's terms. Oftentimes, when they come into these programs, they have been beaten down, racked with a lot of shame and guilt. And this gives them an opportunity to change their life if they're willing to. and then to give back to others. We have a saying that to give to those what we've been so freely given. So it's a spiritual-based program, but it gives people the opportunity to really change their lives. The program is set up on what we call incentives. When they first come into the program, when the men and women first come into the program, they have limited access. They are asked to be attentive to just being oriented to the program. They have very few privileges. Over time, they gain privileges. They get more responsibilities, and they're given a lot of responsibilities in the program. They start with just sweeping around their bed, but then over time, they're given more responsibilities of housekeeping, preparing meals, laundry, housekeeping chores, just trying to give them life skills. And over time, they get more privileges in the program. So it's a program that gives back. If they're willing to make those changes, those psychic changes that take place, then they are rewarded with more and more privileges. They start out in a dormitory setting, and then within probably a month or two, they'll be in a single room or a double room occupancy, and they're given more and more privileges as they move through the program.
Currently, there are 13 Recovery Kentucky centers across the state, with at least one center for males and one center for females in each of Kentucky's six congressional districts, and the 14th is slated to open soon. Mike, in your opinion, how has the Recovery Kentucky program helped communities address substance abuse?
Yeah, I think that that's been an interesting undertaking as we've moved into programs. We've sometimes come into issues like NIMBY, the not in my backyard, from some communities. But every time we moved into a community, over time, usually within the first year, communities are very accepting of these programs. We all know that there are many communities have actively addicted men and women who are drug and alcohol dependent. But this is an opportunity for men and women who are in recovery, who are committed to changing their life, to be in this community. So one of the things that it's done in communities where we have been admitted has been that those men or those women want to give back to the community. So they'll be involved in community activities. They'll be involved in anything that would communicate to the community that they are grateful to be there, grateful to have an opportunity to change their lives, that they want to be responsible men and women. And so they're very appreciative of the communities that have given them this opportunity. So we also ask the communities to volunteer to give back to them, too. So there are always donations that communities can give back to the programs. But again, over time, these programs have really made a difference in helping to give a feeling of hope. And that's really been one of the stigmas in recovery programs, is that oftentimes communities feel like that addiction is a hopeless disease. But when they see the men and women come through these programs, make those major changes in their life, and then give back to the community, it sends a message to that community that addiction is something that people can recover from and can make a difference with their lives.
Let's talk about some of the numbers, some of the success of the Recovery Kentucky program. How did the Recovery Kentucky Outcome Study conducted by the University of Kentucky Center for Drug and Alcohol Research originate?
Yeah, the Center for Drug and Alcohol Research actually has been in existence probably for almost 20 years, I would say. I knew about the Center for Drug and Alcohol Research in my previous career. So when the Recovery Kentucky initiative started, Mr. Ball asked me to make sure that we evaluate the effectiveness of this program. So I made contact with the University of Kentucky Center for Drug and Alcohol Research. I knew the director of the program. I asked him to look at ways that we can measure success and not just look at substance use, but look at all the behavioral parameters that go with substance abuse and to really measure over time whether we're making a difference in people's lives. So what we did is we looked at seven factors of areas of success in the substance abuse arena. Number one, of course, is substance use. We want to obviously decrease or eliminate substance use for those men and women who are in these recovery centers. And number two, we want to affect homelessness. We want to hopefully decrease homelessness, eliminate homelessness if possible. Three, we want to have an impact on employment. We want to see what are the percentage of men and women that are employed when they come into this program and what is their employment rate a year later. Fourth, we want to look at mental health and physical health, what their status is when they come in as far as their physical health and their mental health, and see what the changes are after that. We want to look at criminal justice involvement. Oftentimes, men and women have a history of criminal justice involvement before coming in. We want to measure that. What's their rate of arrest and incarceration before? And then what's it after a year after leaving the program? And finally, and a very important part of this program is recovery supports. Recovery supports means how involved are you in your community in asking and giving back to others, whether that could be self-help support, could be community supports, it could be your church, but it's how many people in your life can you depend upon to support you in your recovery from this disease. So those were the areas that we measured in our Recovery Kentucky outcome study.
Great. Well, can you talk about maybe some of the actual outcomes that the study shows?
Yeah, we've had some pretty significant changes in health as a result of these studies. Let me just start with substance use. When individuals come into the program, we measure what was their past 6 month use of substance use. 83% said they used illegal drugs, 63% used opioids. And at follow-up, 1 year after they were admitted to the program, we had an illegal drug use of 5%, and opioid use went from 63% to 2%. The same kind of a response with alcohol use. 50% had used alcohol to intoxication prior to coming into the program. Only 5% expressed that they had used alcohol to intoxication after. Again, 38% had used heroin. 2% used heroin at follow-up. So a major decrease in drug use as a result of the program. We also looked at homelessness. 38% of the men and women were homeless when they came into the program. When we did the follow-up study, 2% were homeless. So again, a significant decrease in homelessness from the result of this program. We also looked at health status. What were your health status? 29% at intake said they had a great deal of difficulty with their health before they came into the program, and only 5% had difficulty with health. Mental health, 66% reported they had severe depression, only 11% at follow-up. Anxiety, 74% at intake, only 9% at follow-up. So again, significant changes in substance abuse as well as homelessness. We also looked at criminal justice involvement. 56% indicated that they had been arrested 6 months before admitted to the program. Only 3% expressed that they had been arrested at follow-up. Incarceration, 76% of the men and women had been incarcerated 6 months prior to coming into the program, and only 13% had been incarcerated a year later. So again, significant changes in what we call positive behavior as a result of these programs.
Well, Recovery Kentucky really is a team effort, and it's a joint effort by Kentucky Housing Corporation, Kentucky Department for Local Government, and the Department of Corrections. Mike, can you speak to the way that Recovery Kentucky program has been a partnership among state agencies and local communities?
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the great attributes of this program. It's not just a program that's initiated through Kentucky Housing Corporation. Obviously, it couldn't have gotten started without Kentucky Housing Corporation's initiative, because they put the major funding to go into the building of these programs. They used their tax credits, their home funds, their affordable housing trust funds. And then they were also, each of the programs received Federal Home Loan Bank from Cincinnati for their funding of the facility. But the partnership that went into the commitment for the program itself to keep the program operational took the Department of Local Government, the Department of Corrections, the USDA through our food stamp program, the HUD through basically the Section 8 housing that goes into these programs. And then, of course, the local communities came up with local grants and fundraisers that continue the program. So it's really a combination of a lot of state agencies coming together. And one of the unique principles of this program to me has been that when we started Recovery Kentucky, it didn't come as a result of asking the federal or state government for new money. It wasn't a matter of going to the legislature or Congress and saying we need $40 million to start a Recovery Kentucky. Basically, Kentucky, through this innovative approach, took existing dollars and reformatted, refocused existing state dollars and federal funds to initiate this program to now have 14 100-bed recovery centers in Kentucky.
Yeah, actually, I've seen a lot of interest from other states about the Recovery Kentucky program because of its impacts. Has the Recovery Kentucky initiative been replicated in other states?
It really has. The model has been replicated in North Carolina, in Virginia, and the Recovery Kentucky model has most recently been replicated in West Virginia, both Huntington and Charleston. So there are other states that have an interest in what we're doing. It really does take the leadership at the state level and the federal level in order to make something like this happen. But if people are committed and are willing to work together, any state can replicate this model.
Well, Mike, thank you again for your time with us today and for sharing more about the lasting contributions Mr. Don Ball made, impacting so many individuals and families to live sober, self-sufficient lives. To our listeners, thank you for connecting with us today for this podcast. You're welcome to join the conversation by leaving comments, and please share today's podcast in your social media streams to help us broaden our conversation. Follow us on social media. Until next time, thank you.